Scusa! Scusa! Coming through! They know how to enjoy themselves, don't they? I haven't seen this kind of celebration since VE Day.
They certainly seem very happy. Where exactly are we, Doctor?
Italy, 1982. A friendly little town called Ferrara.
What are they celebrating?
I've no idea. Hey there! Per cortesia, why the big party?
3-1, amigos! 3-1, that's why! Viva Italia!
3-1. Of course! July 11th, 1982, Italy beats West Germany 3-1 in the World Cup final.
Oh, that's football, isn't it? Oh, I thought something important had happened, like Italian spacemen landing on the moon.
Charlie, the World Cup, not important. The entire country's partying tonight, and rightly so. Viva Italia!
We didn't come here for an ease-up, Doctor, remember? You said there was some sort of odd signal being broadcast.
Yes, I'm afraid so. The TARDIS detected a disturbance in the interspatial energy fields of this area. Whatever's generating it is well above and beyond the Earth's technology, that's for sure. Let's check the tracer again. This way.
Oh, that way leads into the woods, Doctor.
So?
Oh, nothing. Actually, I rather fancied a moonlit stroll through an unfamiliar forest to search for some undoubtedly hostile alien creature.
Me too. Come on. We're getting warm.
I can see some lights up ahead.
Shh, Charlie. Keep your head down. Over there, in the clearing. Look.
Doctor, what are they? They've got arms as thick as tree trunks.
Shh. Just listen.
I'm ready for your report, Thorn. The atmospheric tests. Are the final results within acceptable compatibility parameters?
Yes, Captain Vangor.
And the transdimensional projector, have the tertiary signals been received?
Yes, Captain Vangor.
And my full dress uniform? Is it pressed and ready for my inspection?
Yes, Captain Vangor.
Good, Thorn, good. Your performance on this mission has been entirely adequate.
Thank you, Captain. Shall I continue work on the portal?
Yes, I shall supervise. Tell me, Thorn, do you believe in destiny?
Captain?
Destiny. The belief that a life's path is preordained.
Well, the underlying philosophical supposition is based on...
Don't suppose you've ever given it a moment's thought. Your place in the Grand Order was decided the moment you were plucked from your birthing tank. You belong to a basic D-stream gene class form.
C-stream, actually,
don't
Captain.
Interrupt me. You have no imagination, you see, no vision. You carry out your humble role to the best of your abilities and never dream of anything more. But I, Thorn, I do dream.
Really, Captain?
Yes, I dream of parades and marches and my face on the proud grey flag of our empire. These simple colonization surveys are beneath me, Thorn. I'm made for greater things. A fusing on my skin.
Yes, Captain, your skin looks particularly portentous this evening.
Hey?
Shall I align the subspace modifiers now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, go on.
Come away carefully. This is no time to start snapping any loud twigs.
There only seem to be two of them at least. But they are rather large.
Only two now, but if they get that transdimensional portal up and running, this planet will be up to its eyeballs in Threlips. And that won't be a pretty sight, Charlie, believe me.
Threlips?
They're an aggressive, expansionist race. There's nothing they like better than coming across a nice, unsuspecting planet and moving in when nobody's looking.
So I take it they're not here for the party, then?
A Threlip would know what a party was if one bit him on the elbow. They're a joyless bunch. Duller than a turtle marathon. Highly advanced on a technological level, though they've even had dealings with the Time Lords.
So how do we stop them switching on this portal thing? Doctor?
Hmm.
Oh, I know. I could sneak around behind them, then show myself, you know. Hey, you, what are you doing on my planet? I'll call the polizia, that sort of thing. They're big, but I bet they're slow. While they're off chasing me, you could sneak into the clearing and blow up the portal.
Not bad, but I see a problem.
What?
Did you notice those devices attached to their belts, the ones that resembled guns?
Yes, what are they?
Guns. And a Threlip blaster could level most of this woodland with a single burst. I know you can move quickly, Charlie, but trying to outrun a radium-charged fireball is just as hard as it looks.
Oh. Any other ideas, then?
Great Expectations.
You're going to quote Dickens to them. I really think my plan's better, Doctor.
No, I'm onto something. No idea what, but I'm definitely onto something. Great Expectations. Come on, let's get back to the TARDIS.
What is keeping you, Thorn? By my calculations, you should have completed the portal over 23 decalons ago.
It will far be it for me to suggest your calculations are in error, Captain, but I believe I have adhered to the standardized production schedule. The portal will surely be operational.
Excellent! Then we get...
Thorn. What's that object?
It's an old Captain. Then scan it, you fool! Quickly!
Preliminary readings indicate a vehicle. Possible trans-temporal capability.
Temporal?
Greetings to Captain Vengor of the mighty Threlip Empire. We bring you salutations from the High Council of Time Lords of Gallifrey, Masters of the Web of Time, and Guardians of the Eternal Chronology of Existence. I am the Doctor, a humble transcriber. May I have the immaculate honor of presenting to you the most exalted Time Lady, Charlie Ostientatius.
Charmed, I'm sure.
Time Lords. Intriguing. Why are you here?
We have been granted the rare privilege of entrance to the time stream to conduct a mission of observation. Please, carry on with your work. Don't mind us. We'll just find a quiet corner somewhere.
What exactly have you been sent here to observe?
Why, you, of course, Captain.
Me?
Yes. Surely this doesn't surprise
you. Captain, I know I speak with you privately.
What do you want, Thorn? Can't you see I'm busy?
I advise caution, sir. The Time Lords are an unusual race, not driven by the normal motivations of advanced life forms. This may be some form of trickery.
The Time Lords are bloodless intellectuals, you idiot! They are bound by their most sacred vows to never interfere in the affairs of other species. All they ever do is watch more interesting beings conduct their lives. Look at them parading around in their ridiculous robes. Do you seriously believe these creatures would pose any threat to us?
But, Captain, we should at least make a report to the head of the department.
You're a fool, Thorn, but I never realized you were also a coward! And yet, if the Time Lords are here now, that can only mean Doctor.
Yes, Captain?
Why have you chosen this moment to observe me?
Well, we are not really at liberty to say. We could get into trouble with our superiors if we started blabbing about future events. That's really against the rules, you see.
I wish to know, Time Lord.
What an impressive weapon. There's no need for violence, Captain. You see,
You fool, Doctor! I told you we should have observed the Captain from a distance. You have violated a dozen different protocols by making contact with him.
I know, my lady, and I am sorry. I just couldn't help it. How could I pass up the chance to actually meet Vengor the First?
Vengor the First?
Your fascination with history's greatest war heroes has always concerned me, Doctor. We Time Lords should be above such primitive obsessions.
History's greatest?
My starstruck assistant has already overstepped his authority, Captain, so I doubt revealing some small aspect of your future will do any further damage. You are preparing for the invasion of Earth. This will mark a turning point in the evolution of the Threlip Empire, and you are at the heart of that change.
I see. Then this world holds the key to my destiny. Yes!
Your legend inspires centuries of Threlip conquests, Captain. The saga of Vengor the First is taught in schools across the galaxy for millennia to come.
This is amazing. I always suspected it. But how? What happens?
The commander of Earth's invasion is struck down unexpectedly by an illness, and you assume control of the first wave of troops. Your brilliant leadership at this time of crisis marks you out as a hero to every Threlip in the Empire.
You say too much, Doctor. The captain must be allowed to live out his destiny without any further information from us.
My lady, I...
No! No, tell me everything! Every detail!
Well, perhaps you'd like to see some of this planet's inhabitants, Captain.
Why would I want to do that?
Well, they will be the first slaves of your new regime. I just thought you might be interested.
Oh, yes, of course! You will guide me, Time Lord. Thorn, remain here and complete your duties.
Yes, Captain.
I must apologize for my excitement, Empire. Captain, this really is...
And you are?
Sub-technician Thorn, my lady.
And what are your duties?
Oh, I am constructing a subspace portal which will allow the captain to file a report on the suitability of this world for colonization. It will also allow the first squad of Threlip troops to enter this planet.
Then you'd better get on with it, hadn't you?
Yes, my lady.
How long have you served under Captain Ben-Gor, technician?
I have been the captain's personal assistant for 32 years, my lady.
Really? You must feel very fortunate to have worked so closely with such a great figure.
Oh, yes. Oh, I've often wondered what I did to deserve it. My lady?
Yes?
I was wondering, we must have detailed knowledge of how the Threlip Empire remembers this time period, yes?
Of course.
Might I inquire? Well, I mean, if it isn't a breach of your protocols, could you possibly...
What in heaven's name are you babbling about? Spit it out, man!
How am I remembered, my lady? In history?
Thorn, let me think.
Yes?
Do you know, it's quite peculiar. Future Threlip history is mostly based upon Ven'Gor's personal memoirs. I have read all 56 volumes.
Yeah?
And I cannot recall a single mention of any Thorn.
What?
You appear to have dropped your wrench, Thorn.
What?
On your foot.
What?
Well, here they are, Captain. Homo sapiens. Hairy, smelly creatures with no dress sense. I know they don't look like much, but you'll soon whip them into shape.
What is wrong with them? Why are they acting in such an absurd manner?
Oh, you noticed that? Terrible, isn't it? Entire continents have fallen victim to the plague now.
Plague? What plague?
It's sweeping the planet at the moment. An insanity virus. Once contracted, its victims begin to scream in unison. Gyrate their limbs uncontrollably, press their faces against one another, and then they tend to fall over and die.
It is horrible! What's this plague called?
It's known as World Cup Fever, Captain.
Hey, amigo, you're back! Hey, what's with the costumes, eh? Hey, you big guy! Hey, I like your one of the best. Here, have some wine!
Take your paws off me, you disgusting anthropod!
Hey, don't be mad! Hey, put me down! Hey!
No!
Surely you are not concerned for the fate of that primitive doctor?
Who, him? No, of course not. It's just, Captain, I've no wish to alarm you, but...
But what?
The plague is spread by physical contact.
Oh.
And Threlips are not immune to it.
Oh, what?! What are you saying?
No. This isn't supposed to happen.
Well, there must be a cure.
Well, yes, if taken quickly enough, but... Wait a minute. What luck?
What?
The building you just threw that man into? It's a clinic. Those bottles in the window are supplies of vaccine. Just lie still, amico, and you'll have nothing more than a hangover to worry about tomorrow. Here, Captain, drink this.
How much shall I consume?
Well, for someone of your stature, better make it the whole bottle. That's it.
I can't believe it. 32 years of servitude. 32 years of listening to that pompous fool's endless speeches. 32 years of correcting every spelling mistake in his reports. and I don't even warrant a single mention in his memoirs.
Now, wait a moment. I've just remembered something. Volume 17, chapter 93, there is a reference to a thon.
Oh. Oh, well, I mean, that's something, I suppose.
Let's see, how does it go? On the morning of my promotion, I received a present from my commanding officer. A furry little wart snoggler I decided to name Thon. He became the platoon mascot.
What?
How do you feel, Captain?
I'm not sure.
Now, the plague's early symptoms include dizziness, loss of coordination, slurred speech. You don't feel any of that, do you? Steady, Captain.
Don't give me more vaccines, fool! Give me every ball in the clinic!
Yes, Captain, whatever you say.
I can recall a little more from the passage, you know. Do you wish to hear it, Thon?
No. Yes.
Thon was a funny little fellow. Highly obedient, but not very bright. He's always attempting to please me. How the men and I would laugh at his merry squeaking. He followed me everywhere. One day, he followed me into the path of a mechanical hedge trimmer and was chopped into little bits. It was rather amusing, actually. You seem upset.
Upset? Me? Upset? Why would you think that, my lady? Just because of all my efforts for the Empire, every hour I've toiled, every sacrifice I've made, every insult I've been endured, will be remembered as the antics of a small blue rodent? No, I'm not upset, not the slightest!
Oh, good. Because I thought you might be. Upset, that is. Oh, look. There's Captain Bengor and the Doctor.
Thon! Thon! Come here!
Oh, yes, Captain. Your slightest wish is my reason to live. What do you want now? Your boots scrubbed, your blaster wiped, your one tiny little medal polished?
How dare you speak to me that way?
Now, what are you going to do about it? Feed me into an edge trimmer? Oh, why do you smell so foul?
I have contracted World Cup fever, you idiots! Soon, I will begin screaming and gyrating and pressing my face against yours.
What if I smash it in first, you fat oaf?
Oh, you little
wart snuggler!
Well done, Charlie.
Oh, nothing to it. Thanks for the bit about the rat. That went down a treat.
Now, we just need a few minor adjustments to this portal's primary navigation systems. And voila, we're ready.
Well, we've stirred them up. How are we going to calm them down?
Oh, me, you're running the show, remember? I'm just the assistant. Exercise some authority.
Oh, yes. Stop this at once! Look at the pair of you. Now do you see why knowledge of the future is such a dangerous thing? Why the Time Lords do not share such information with lesser races? You are utter disgraces to your empire.
He started it.
Silence! You have both jeopardized the future of Threlip society with your foolishness. What do you have to say for yourselves? Well?
My lady, if I may be allowed to say...
Be quiet, Doctor. You have utterly failed in your duty. You have allowed an important historical figure to become infected with a deadly illness. I shall deal with you when we return to Gallifrey.
I'm so very sorry, my lady.
And your punishment will be severe, Doctor.
Yes, my lady.
Perhaps a century or two of scrubbing the TARDIS floors with your toothbrush will curb your enthusiasm.
I deserve nothing less, my lady.
But that can wait. Vengor must receive proper medical treatment immediately. His survival is crucial to the web of time. Thon has also clearly been infected. Doctor, you will reverse the portal's route and return them to their home planet. Quickly, there isn't a moment to lose.
As you say, my lady. The portal is ready. It's time to go, Captain.
Call me Vengor, Doctor. You... come here. You are the finest friend I've ever known.
Thank you, Vengor. I'm truly touched. Especially my ribs.
Are we going or not?
Step through the portal, both of you.
Just wait till I get you in front of a disciplinary hearing.
No, shut your mouth, you fat.
Well, that's a relief. Where did you really send them?
The 17th moon of Mordalius Prime. I hope they patch things up. They won't have a lot of other company there.
I can't believe how heavy this collar is. Do your people really walk around all day wearing these things?
Yes, they're a stiff-necked lot back home. Come on, let's get back into some proper clothes and go back to Ferrara. No sleep till dawn, Charlie.
Hold on, Doctor. What about all this machinery?
What about it?
Well, there's this portal contraption and the Threlip spaceship must be around here somewhere.
So?
Well, shouldn't you dismantle them? They're a bit dangerous to just leave lying about.
Oh, that's boring. That can wait. Italy is partying tonight, Charlie. This is no time to work.
It won't take long, I'm sure.
Oh, but... Oh, I mean...
You shall do as I command, Doctor, or the TARDIS floors will be the least of your concerns.
You know something, Charlie? You make a far more convincing Time Lord than me.
Oh, thank you, Doctor.
That wasn't really a compliment.
Everywhere you go, they tell tales of the Doctor. There are galaxies far away from here where children sleep more soundly, knowing he's out there fighting off the demons. And the demons twist and turn in fear, knowing that their enemy awaits. So long as the stories are told, he's never really gone.
The more aspects, you know, whether they're foisted on the character or not, you know, that is by some, you know, evil outsider, you know, to see different sides of him or potential different sides of him or to hear different things coming from him just adds to it. I'm happy for that.
I don't think anyone has come remotely near it, which is great, but it's fascinating reading what people think. Because some people really extrapolate and really go to town on it and come up with some amazing things. You think, I hadn't thought about that, and that's one way we could have taken it.
Yeah.
Because they really sort of sit down and go, oh, this happened and this happened, so this is probably going to lead to this. And there's been times I thought, God, I wish we had thought of that.
Hello, I'm India Fisher, and welcome to this behind-the-scenes look at the production of Zagreus, Big Finish's 40th anniversary Doctor Who story. You'll be hearing from the cast and crew of this special release, including all four Doctors. But first, let's go back to the first recording session and have a little listen to what's going on.
Miss Pollard?
Oh, right.
Should do the trick.
What's in it?
Look again.
It's turning into a book. The Alice Compendium by Lewis Carroll contains Alice's adventures in Wonderland and through the
We're ahead
Looking
of
Glass.
Schedule. Look again. Which is something which we didn't anticipate.
Producer... Jason Hay Gallery.
And they seem to be enjoying themselves immensely today. Paul's in an incredibly good mood. It's one of those old team things where Paul and India work off each other now. Because you can't get away from that for anniversary stories. You've got to do some form of multi-doctor story. But I think in this instance we've done something totally different, which is down to both Gary and Alan coming up with something which hasn't been done before. And hopefully we'll... bring out a new aspect to the multi-doctor story.
Ow! Doctor! Doctor, what's wrong with you?
I told you, girl, I am not the Doctor! I am become he who sits inside your head, he who lives among the dead, he who sees you in your bed and eats you when you're sleeping. I am become Zagreus!
I think, I hope that that Neverland actually works as a pretty much as a complete unit, because you get the very final scene sort of completes the irony of the thing with the unreal villain finally becoming real.
Co-writer Alan Barnes.
So it is, Neverland is a complete play as itself, so what happened next wasn't really there at the top of my brain at all. It was another case of Gary saying that'll be somebody else's problem. And it was mine again.
I planned it, not in detail, but I certainly planned it at the time we were doing Storm Warning.
Co-writer, director and producer Gary Russell.
I knew that I wanted the next season to end with the line, "I am Zagreus." I don't think we'd actually worked out the words "Zagreus," had we? Because that came from you. But I knew that I wanted something. You know, I remember when I was commissioning Alan to do Neverland, and on the sort of 95 lists thing, the things on the list to do, was the final line needed to be, "I am not the Doctor, I am whatever." Yeah. Because I knew that's what I wanted to do for the anniversary story. I wanted the whole thing of who is the Doctor really, what is the Doctor now, how is this going to change things? Because I knew that with the Eighth Doctor, that was something we'd be able to do. We'd be able to take it and progress it forward, because there was no finite cut-off point.
Hey, I can really scream, can't I?
Do it, girl, yeah. Do it!
You really?
Do you want to level?
You really can? No, we'll just go for it on the tape.
Do you want me to
No, I want you to stay, you stay put, okay. We'll adjust it in here.
There once was a duck with a gun who really wasn't much fun till a fairy with dust did just what she must, and so the battle was won.
Top.
Not quite as good as the expert.
Oh,
the
fantastic. Could we get any more OTT? This
great.
Is brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Certainly with Neverland, I knew that we weren't going to pick this up until the anniversary story. Whether I'd work that out when we did Storm Warning, I don't know. I think when we were doing Storm Warning, I was more concerned that we're even going to have a second season of McGann, let alone an anniversary story. In fact, I don't think we even had a license that covered the anniversary story at that point. Certainly when we were doing Neverland, I always knew that there would be no pickup from that cliffhanger for another 18 months.
The really weird thing is the numbering thing, that it happens to have come out to be number 50.
That's just
that's quite
bizarre.
Scary. And that is completely unplanned, as far as I know.
It is. It was Jason that spotted that, not me. He said, "Oh, that'll be released number 50, won't it?" And I think I sat down and went, "No, don't be stupid. It is." Oh, blimey, I thought.
What does the 40th anniversary of Doctor Who mean to those involved in the audio plays?
Oh, God, I think if I sort of sat down and said, oh, it's the 40th anniversary story, it's, you know, you just sort of sit there and freeze. No, I mean, you just have to sit and construct a bloody good story. Surprise, engage, excite people, educate, inform, entertain, all those things. You couldn't possibly sort of sit down and go, like, it's something significant event carved in stone. It's an event which requires commemoration, but, you know, it requires commemoration by returning to the core values of Doctor Who, if you like.
You know, we were well aware, of course, that this year was the big anniversary.
Paul McGann.
You know, and there was already talk of perhaps getting something special together and stuff. Yes, I mean, so yeah, of course, you know, we're well aware of it. And it's great, you know, 40 years. 40 years. Yeah, it is a long time. Absolutely a long time.
Bonnie Langford.
I think it's very nice to be in a show that has survived so long, that has such a worldwide connection, that has great supporters, young and old, and that's been through many generations. I think it's great to be part of that. It is almost a community.
Nicola Bryant.
As a fan of Doctor Who and someone who is in the show, I'm thrilled that something's actually happening to celebrate, because I think there are some anniversaries that have gone past almost unnoticed, and I think the 40th is significant. It makes us feel very old when you start calculating.
Peter Davison.
It's a good excuse for people to have, sort of to celebrate the fact that it's, you know, been around for a long time and it's still in various forms going. You know, they're releasing things on DVD all the time now, and certainly my young children love Doctor Who. Admittedly, they've only seen me playing Doctor Who.
I heard crying.
Probably never conducted an interview with somebody while breastfeeding.
It's a first for me.
Sophie Aldred and Baby.
Oh, I mean, it's just fantastic. The whole idea that that people actually are wanting to celebrate it, and that it's such a big thing. I mean, when we finished, I thought, oh yeah, it'll probably last a couple of years, and then the interest will die down. And another weird thing is that, of course, I was doing my first season as Ace during the 25th anniversary, and so that makes me feel jolly old.
Sylvester McCoy.
No, it's exciting. I mean, it's really great that it's still going at 40 years. It's gone on, and it's although it's not on the television, it seems very much alive on these audio CDs. It does, very positive.
Oh, and Colin Baker.
Positive feeling, it's
and
great.
And of course, it's not just the 40th anniversary of Doctor Who, it's the 20th anniversary to the month of my being given the part.
Really?
And starting work on it. So I'm half of it. Let's stop looking like that.
What?
McCoo.
The bigger half.
Oh, and this is me.
Well, I mean, I make no bones about the fact that I'm not a huge Doctor Who fan, but even I have realised the significance of this year, and it's, I think Big Finish have done it proud, actually, with bringing all the Doctors together and the odd few surprises, I understand. And it really feels like, you know, a family coming back together, and I feel a bit of a charlatan because, you know, I wasn't anything to do with it, really. But they've all been very nice to me and brought me into the fold, so bless them all.
I think it's a good policy to leave people wanting more. And I knew, I had the faith that Neverland was going to be good enough that we would get away with that. You know, if I'd thought Neverland wasn't a particularly strong story, then it would have been a bit of a cheat. But I knew when I first read the first draft of Neverland, I thought, yep, this is going to be worth it. This is going to end on a point, and people will be going, oh, but. And then going, but, you mean we've got to wait 18 months?
It's not actually a cliffhanger as such, in that there's a ticking bomb in the room or something, and it's just like, oh, are they going to live? You know, it's a dramatic high point rather than a cliffhanger.
5-3, scene 62. It'll be after page 152.
What? Scene 62.
That's the one. Okay, should we go for a read-through? Off you go.
That dinner service was antique, and Romana was...
I said right from the word go, if we're going to do a multi-doctor story, it can't be a multi-doctor story like the Three Doctors or the Five Doctors or the Two Doctors, because that's been done to death. Let's get all the Doctors together, let's throw a potload of companions in and have them all romping around and having a big anniversary adventure, which was great in 1973 and equally great in 1983. In 2003, that's not quite so great. I think Doctor Who fandom, and I think the stories are more sophisticated is the wrong word, but I think we've all moved on a bit. So I wanted to do something that celebrated who the actors are rather than celebrated who the Doctors and that are. And so I had to find a story that can encapsulate doing effectively a multi-Doctor story, but with a quite different twist.
It's also the sort of sense of needing to defeat expectation is part of it from the outset, because it, kind of similar to the sort of problem I felt I had with Neverland, and you have to fight against the obvious in a way. Great, you've got how many actors? How many actors have we got?
I shudder to think.
20?
More? Over 20.
But you've got 20 people, all of whom are great actors, all of whom bring very, very different things to it, being fans and having worked with them. You know, we're aware of what they can do. And, you know, I think we had a responsibility to try and tailor something to fit.
In Zagreus, the cast found themselves playing an array of new characters. Annika Wills.
Who am I playing? Lady Pollard.
Charlie's mother.
Charlie's mother. What I like is that she's an imperious lady. I like this. I like playing imperious ladies. I know quite a few imperious ladies.
Sarah Sutton.
No, it's a completely new character, I think. Quite a well-to-do... a woman who's in the army in the 50s. I can't remember even what rank she is. But yeah, in the 50s. I wasn't given the whole script, so I'm a little bit in the dark as to what happens, and I won't give too much away with my little bit that I do know. It's good fun, though.
Lisa Bauman.
No, I'm actually playing a mechanical gazelle sergeant major. Make of that what you will. I went and did 3 weeks on an Outward Bound course, and I spoke to the army, then went to London Zoo, met the gazelles, had a good chat. I think I'm kind of pretty prepared for this now, so let's hope it comes back.
Caroline Morris.
No, she's completely different. I mean, she couldn't be more far removed, I think. She's a little orphan girl. In this one, I suppose that's fairly the same for Ehrman, I suppose. Yeah, I'm sure you could draw parallels, but I haven't particularly sort of consciously tried to make connections.
I'm playing Mary. I'm the daughter of the Reverend Townsend, which is played by Peter Davison.
Yeah, right. Very like the Doctor. I was trying to imagine the Doctor, but with a dog collar on. that was the extent of my characterisation. So slightly plummier, but not there wasn't a lot.
Well, I'm playing Tepesh, who is basically a vampire, rather In fact, I wish there was more of Tepesh in it, because I quite like Tepesh. Because he eats a few people at the beginning and sucks their blood, and the sort of part I feel I ought to be playing at this time of life.
Yes.
Leaping on young virgins and sucking their blood. It would be lovely, wouldn't it?
Yes, I get to grow up them because I play Uncle Winky.
Yes, Uncle Winky.
Yes, who's a kind of a Walt Disney of the later universe. Who created fun in the universe.
What are you saying about Uncle Winky?
Uncle Winky, well, he does like...
He gropes young ladies like Walt Disney of the later universe. Are you saying that Walt Disney groped young ladies?
Oh, no, I wouldn't say that.
No.
No, he could sue me because when they defrost him, he comes
actually,
back.
Actually, oh, that's true, because he's in cryogenic suspension, isn't he?
Yes. Although, did it not break down?
Oh, no, that would be sad, wouldn't it?
He thawed out.
It didn't pay that. He's thawed out a bit.
He's pretty thawed, yeah.
It was nice being able to give people, to be able to write stuff for these people that we knew they would have fun doing, that they would want to do. I think often with Doctors and Companions, they're slightly hidebound by always having to be Nyssa, always having to be the Sixth Doctor, always having to be Erimem, whatever. And therefore, to give them something that is written more to their strengths has been a bit of fun, and I think they've all responded really nicely to that and really kind of enjoyed it.
And a couple of them have got things to do which are way out of left field. They're showing sides themselves they've never shown before, which is cool.
And not just the Companions, I mean, we've done it with all four Doctors as well. You know, Paul's got a chance to do something different, Colin, Sylvester, Peter, they've all got a chance to stretch is probably going too far, but they've got a chance to flex their acting muscles and just do something a bit different.
Right.
Have I got one line in this scene?
Oh. Just in case you're... But it's a good one, Colin, and you delivered it brilliantly. It was a scene stealer.
Oh. Excuse me.
Oh, God. We don't want scene stealers in our scenes.
I can't cope anymore.
Right. Is Uncle Colin being naughty?
Very naughty.
But I've got one line, I'm bored.
It's dangerous just to give one line.
I know, give him some more lines, for goodness sake, he's getting out of hand.
No, that's the plan, don't you realise? Lala,
yeah.
Sorry, could I just pick up your that's the first intelligent question you've asked all day once again,
please? What did I do right?
It was just a slight trip over the word intelligent.
It's not one she's used to using.
We always knew that because we'd asked them beforehand, or I'd asked them beforehand, but the four docs were up for doing it, that India was up for doing it. I was reasonably confident that Lala was going to be up for doing it because Lala loves doing these. And therefore it was a case with everyone else of just, you know, writing them parts and hoping they'd be freeform. Right from when we started this, I'd always said that you know, Romana and Leela were the only two characters I would want to put out of time because they're both based on Gallifrey.
Yeah, also, you know, the need was, you know, if you have Romana, she has to have someone to be able to talk to. And Leela actually works great with her because they are total opposites. I don't think anyone's actually sort of put the two together before, but, you know, one is all instinct and one is all intellect. And those are fascinating facets to play around. And, you know, I'm really pleased with their stuff. I think it works really well.
She's become a lot more aggressive, actually. There's a lot of sort of, you know, slagging off men and jumping through mirrors and things. Yes, a bit more adventurous, but of course without the Doctor on her shoulder the whole time, which I had in the series.
Louise Jameson.
It's been rather peculiar, actually. I'm slightly worried that my voice has dropped a couple of octaves since my 20s, you know, due to use and abuse over the years. I've now got a very mature voice, but we'll see. We'll see. It'll be quite interesting to contrast the two soundtracks together, you know, from the old videos and now this.
I love it. It's fun. It's nice to catch up with people one hasn't seen for a long time, and it's nice to play the part. I wouldn't be here otherwise.
Lala Ward.
I never played the sort of Madam President part before doing it on CD. So, yeah, in that sense, it's a different part of her life, but it's the same person.
And Romana would never say Ms. President to you. Sorry, but, I mean, Gary, pull yourself together.
I didn't write this. He wrote this bit.
I might say Madam President.
That sounds would be even better.
It's much better. It sounds as if I run a brothel.
Yes, Madam President, perfect.
Madam President to you, and I shall not submit.
I love doing audio stuff. It's so, I mean, it's hard work, but it's not
it doesn't put the same kind of pressure on you as being in a studio and having to look all right. It's quite nice not having to bother about how you look.
It was rather touching. If you'd said to me in the mid-70s that I would still be, you know, earning money and having a good time on the back of a nine-month job that took place when I was, what, 26, 27, I'd never have believed you. So I'm extremely grateful to Doctor Who, because it's been when I have had those out-of-work times, few and far between. I've been very lucky, but on the odd occasion, Doctor Who has been the lifeline to the business, so it holds a very strong place in my affections.
No, it is odd working with different people. That's one of the nice things about doing these audios. You get a chance to work with some of the other ones, which I never would have if I'd just done it for the telly. It's interesting seeing how you bat off different people and how it works. Yeah,
very nice to be working with Lala, though. Very nice indeed. And hopefully we'll be doing a bit more of that in the future. Okay. There are plans. We've just been talking about them, so hold your breath, cross your fingers.
I think they work very well as a kind of chalk and cheese situation that, as you say, one looks at it from one point of view and one looks at it from the other. And then you've got K-9 in the middle, kind of trying to referee these two people.
Well, I've been with him for the last 721 years, so it's not too bad. You get used to it after that time.
John Leeson.
To hear Louise playing Leela again is wonderful. She's, as you will hear from the CD.
The fevered things that came out of this man's imaginations really were quite bizarre.
Nothing as fevered as the brief.
I don't think it's you know any secret to say that it breaks down basically, although we plotted everything together, the actual scripting, I kind of wrote the first four chunks and you wrote the final two chunks. Mm-hmm. But I worked for Sylvester's sequences. I worked from Alan's plotline. And as I was doing it, I was thinking, what diseased mind came up with this, where everyone's playing giant animals? But it did give me the opportunity to give Bonnie the most fantastic line of, "You stole my bears!" Which won't mean anything now, but was very funny on the day. And she really went for that with Rella.
Speaking personally, I'd like to do all mine again.
You have all beaten me to it, because I'd like to do it again. Sorry, Robert.
That's okay.
You were fine, just the rest of them. You know.
Robert was lovely. I ran out of wind at the end.
This is going to sound really pretentious. I think I see the Eighth Doctor through Charlie now. I've stopped.
You're right. That is quite pretentious, really.
Yeah, I know. When I doing this one, when I was at the keyboard or whatever, I wasn't writing an idea of the Eighth Doctor in the way I perhaps was before. I was writing this person who's perceived entirely through Charlie's eyes.
I think a lot of what we've done with Charlie as well is entirely down to India. If India hadn't been as good as she is, we wouldn't be making her the central focus. She's our guiding light through the greatest, isn't she? She's the one constant. She's Alice leading us through this sort of wonderland.
Well, I think her and the Doctor, more so than any other story, we split off because of the whole Doctor being infected by Zagreus. And so, yes, I mean, I was thrilled when I read it. It's a lovely part for me to play. I get to meet all the other Doctors and get to play the Doctor a bit by working things out and trying to, you know, save the day, which is always nice.
Colin, you've got all of yours, haven't you?
I got all of mine.
India, you're going to do some acting this time, aren't you? I like to start as I mean to go on.
This year, I suppose, with the advent of Conrad, bringing a new dimension, it did suddenly, that highlighted how used to working with Paul I was and how much, actually, just on an acting point of view, how much I'd learnt from him and picked up from him. Because, you know, so Conrad, we'd come out of the studio and Conrad would be like, "God, you two are really good together. You don't even have to, like, look at one another and you know what you're doing." And you're just like, well, yes, I suppose so. And that's really nice. I do feel that I've learned a hell of a lot from Paul. I mean, he's a consummate voice actor. He's brilliant. And you learn via osmosis, really, by just watching them do it. And you know, he's great fun to be around. We have such brilliant parts written for us. You know, the dynamic between the Doctor and Charlie have just got better and better over the years, and I think people have written better and better stuff for us. And so it's moved on as we've got to know one another.
I guess my responsibilities are as a performer. So, you know, when scripts are commissioned or things come down the line, then they become the responsibility. But certainly, you know, I'm not responsible for throwing a party or putting out flags or anything, no. But sure, you know, days like today, yeah, that's my responsibility.
Flounce.
Flounce.
Charlie flounces from stage left.
Flounces into another universe.
Well, sodden.
Looking at Lala and the others, you know, they've hung around. You know, and it's a kind of comfort. And in fact, I don't know, maybe these things just grow over time, but they never say so, but they seem pleased. Or if, you know, they probably seem more like the sort of keepers of the flame, you know, being longer in the family, if you like, you know. I'm just a sort of upstart kid.
Death
compared.
Zone, the Jabberwock!
That has to be the biggest load of old rubbish I've heard in all my lives.
Exactly!
Absolute balderdash, Leela, and you wouldn't have it any other way. I hit the spot. Got any more?
Yeah, my attention span isn't great anyway. Generally, in these things. And this one was, I think, was particularly hard to keep track of. You know, today was a funny old day. In that respect, when it comes to standing there having to read 4 or 5 pages at a lick, you know, there really isn't that time to make mental or intellectual connections with, you know, continuity and what may have gone before and what am I doing now and whatever. You just got to get the stuff out, you know. That shouldn't be interesting to anyone who's not a performer, but that's the way it is. You know, you just got to sing the song first and then they put it together afterwards, kind of thing.
Oh, Doctor, she's...
The ghost in the machine, he's around. Some people used to think they'd see a grey lady in the engine rooms. I wonder...
So.
That was an awkward pause.
I know when I was first cast in the TV film, or they first approached me to do it, you know, initially, really, how I was persuaded was by the potential, you know, and as I discussed it with the producer at the time, for, you know, how we might do things and the different kind of different facets of his personality that we could explore. Sadly, that never happened. But we're getting to do it via this kind of work. So I'm happy for that, yeah.
Yeah, we want people to be, you know, on the edge of their seats. We want people to be scared or worried or anxious or, you know, all those...
Or crying.
We
want people to cry. We're evil men. We want people reduced to tears.
One of our lead actors described one scene as an emotional mugging of the fans.
Which I thought was fairly justified,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
I was aware that Doctor Who was on a Saturday afternoon with William Hartnell.
Don Warrington.
I think that's probably the last time I watched it. I just, if I'm honest, it's not something I tune into, really. I think I'm too old for that. Anyway, I'm enjoying it today, yeah. Yeah, it gives you lots of space to be outrageous, I think. Yeah, that's good fun. To be over the top. He's arrogant, he's cruel, he has a sense of humor, incredibly ambitious, and a degree of viciousness.
I have an end vision in sight for it. I know, you know, I know the title and I know the basic storyline of how one day it will be wrapped up, if it ever needs wrapping up. It's the sort of thing that if I think the BBC turn around to us and say, right, your licence is coming to an end and we're not going to renew it, that's when I should go, right, that's that story. We now put that in and wrap up the Eighth Doctor storyline. From the Neverlands Agreus point of view, there will one day, I think, be an ending, but that in itself will still then spiral onto something else. We are very lucky now, we're at a stage, you know, 10, 11 years on from when the series ended, that we know pretty much who our audience is. We're not kidding ourselves that we're suddenly going to pick up all thousands of brand new people who've never heard of Doctor Who before, and so Grace is going to be their entry into the... Because Doctor Who, unfortunately, isn't like that. And yet that's actually quite fortunate for us, and it's quite fortunate for the books, because it means you can use a shorthand with your audience and they will still know what's going on. And I don't see that as being a particularly lazy or negative way of writing scripts, because you're dealing with an audience that now expects that. They've had, ever since the new adventure started in 91, that expectation's been built up and people are now used to what they get from Doctor Who, new Doctor Who, that isn't made like what it was on telly.
Zagreus sits inside your head. Zagreus lives among the dead. Zagreus sees you in your bed and eats you when you're sleeping.
Sir Grayus, at the end of days, Sir Grayus lies all other ways. Sir Grayus comes when time's a maze, and all of history's weeping.
Sir Grayus taking time apart. Sir Grayus fears the hero heart. Sir Grayus seeks the final part, the reward that he is reaping.
Sir Grayus sings when all is lost. Sir Grayus takes all those he's crossed. Sir Grayus wins, and all it cost, the hero's hearts he's keeping.
Sir Grayus seeks the hero's ship. Sir Grayus needs the web to rip. Sir Grayus sups time at a drip. And life aside, he's sweeping.
Don, I've never worked with Don before.
No, I know Don.
Rapscallion.
Yeah, I've never worked with him either.
I've worked with practically everybody else, I think.
I've met others at conventions, but, you know... And also, there are some people in this story we haven't even worked with yet, I should imagine.
The great thing about Doctor Who, and I think that this has evolved over the years, is that each of us are our own Doctor. And so there's not really, I don't believe, certainly from my point of view, there's not a great competitive element to it. You know, I do many other things as well. And I don't feel like, I'm not in sort of competition with them. I am the Fifth Doctor, and that's what I do. And I'm very happy for, the other doctors to be their doctors, and I think that's the way they look at it as well. And we have great times when we get together at conventions and things like that. So it's very sort of bonhomie, I think.
That's almost it, but we'll leave the last word to Paul McGann.
Well, I guess I'm in the family, so unless there's some major falling out, as happens in families, let's not forget. But I guess, they say, looking at Lalo and the others, I've only been here, he came in the door, 5-6 years. So. And provided that it's always, it's always a laugh and there's always new and original stuff, stories and scenarios, put up that we can just have a hoot, then, I'll stay involved. And going back to what I said before, about the TV movie, I was glad that Philip Siegel, he agreed that perhaps... there's a far more sort of melancholic side to this Doctor than, or at least the Doctor that, he wanted me to be, than perhaps we'd seen before. And that's more like my kind of thing, that's more my shtick, so... But paradoxically, even that's fun. Of course, that's what I do, so... So yeah, there's fun to be had, whichever way it is.